conversation. It's a pleasure for me to talk about this topic. So what I'm gonna talk about is essentially based on this paper. So in a work that I've done with Jesse Tyler and Tucker Chan. So it is essentially a new kind of approach to jet physics. And we are sort of trying to explore new kind of application of this approach. So I'm very happy to talk to you about this new approach, and I'm very happy if you have comments and questions and suggestions. Okay, so let me start with this kind of general overview. The first LHC run has just ended. Where do we stand after this first LHC run? Well, so we got a particle, we got the Higgs. A crucial point is that we need to pin down the properties of this particle. And broadly speaking, what we really need to do is trying to fully explore the electroweak scale, right? So there might be a non-minimal Higgs sector, so there might be other Higgs particle, there might be new dynamics, supersymmetry. Those are all questions that still need to be answered. And my point, my simple point is that to answer all these kind of questions at the LHC, jets are a crucial tool, are tools that are going to appear essentially in most of the analysis at the LHC. Now, what is a jet? In a standard approach, a jet is essentially a cluster of hadrons, right? So you get some kind of hard interaction at the LHC, you get your hard partons out of the interaction. Those partons are going to shower, there will be some kind of hadronization process. At the end of the day, you are going to get in your final state hadrons. And the easiest thing that you can do is trying to group those hadrons into clusters according to some recipe. You call those clusters of hadrons jets, and somehow those are playing the role of some kind of proxy for your hard partons, right? Because this is usually the thing that you are interested in. You are interested in the hard interactions. So you use those clusters of hadrons as proxy for your partons. So you can assign to those clusters of hadrons some energy, some PT, some mass, a whole bunch of things, and then you can do your physics analysis based on that. And this is just like a incomplete list of analysis that requires the use of jets. So say, for example, the hadronic decays of the Higgs, when you have multi-jet final states, if you have some heavy resonance, this is decaying. If you want to tag missing energy, you need some, typically you have some imbalance, right? So you have your jets in the final state, you have some imbalance in the momentum. So that's the way you measure your missing energy. And so on. If you want to remove contamination from source radiation, those are all jets-related topics. What I'm going to show you is a new way of thinking about jets, which is not the standard way, which is just clustering particles together. So I already said that the standard approach would be just clustering. There are on the market a lot of algorithms that provide you some recipe that essentially tells you how to cluster those particles together, right? So you essentially start from the closest particles. So the distance is one of the criteria that you take into account for clustering particles together. Then you can take into account energy and so on. There is a whole set of algorithms that you can run, and that will give you those clusters of particles. Now I'm stealing this picture. So the idea is, okay, why do we need a new approach? And what I'm gonna do is just giving you this example, an easy example, where indeed you might start to think that a standard approach, maybe it's not appropriate, it's not as efficient as you would like. And indeed, this is from my historical point of view, it's exactly by studying those kind of signatures that I started to get into the jet business. So what you see here, I've stolen this picture from the Boost 2013 conference, where they are showing. This is actually taken from a paper. Eder is one of the author of this jet substructure by accident. What you see here, that's a ETA phi plane, and all those squares are representing hard particles in your final states. That's a gluino decaying into a top anti-top plus three jets, then the top is going to decay to W, B. So you get a lot of jets in the final state. Well, you get a lot of R particles in the final state. So in this plot, the area of the squares is proportional to the PT of the particle. So of course, if in your final state you get two or three or n isolated particles, R particles, that everybody would agree that, that those things would correspond to jets, right? But in a situation like this, where you have lots of hard particles in your final state, well, you can start drawing, grouping those particles, right, into jets, but it's not those jets are going to overlap, and it's not easy to tell, indeed, how many jets there are in this final state. And the situation gets worse and worse if you have more and more jets in your final state. Of course, you can run your algorithm. Your algorithm, in, for the case where you have overlapping jets, is going to make some arbitrary choice for the overlapping region. It's going to say this overlapping region belongs to these jets, or this rather than to some other jets. So it's going to make some kind of arbitrary decision. What I want to do is that I want to define some way for counting jets, which is not subject to this kind of ambiguity in assigning the overlapping region to one jet rather than to another jet. But as you will see, this will be just an example of a more general framework that hopefully we'll get into. So the first thing that this is a brief outline of what I'm going to talk about. The first thing is just addressing this problem, a new way for counting those jets. Then I'm going to show you that this is indeed a very general strategy. So you can turn, you can apply this general strategy not only to jet multiplicity, but to a broad range of inclusive jet observable. I will get into that. Then I will show that trimming also is into this category. And then I will say something about individual jets. Okay, let me start with this issue of counting the number of jets. Now, let's start with this easy example. So it is just a Monte Carlo simulation. I'm taking PP into die jets at ATV. Then I'm running an algorithm. And I'm studying the distribution of the number of jets, okay? So I have to fix a radius, which is 0.6. And typically what you do, you fix a PT cut threshold, so you only keep the jets whose PT cut is above some threshold, which in this case is 25 GeV. All right, so this is, and the algorithm that I'm using is anti-KT, so that's a standard distribution. You get some events with one jet, two jets, three jets, and so on. What I'm going to show you now is that I can define a variable, which is the following, which is somehow, as you can see, interpolating between these integer values. So this variable, which I'm going to call n tilde jet, is a variable that is, first of all, it's an event shape, so it doesn't require any clustering. I'm not running any algorithm. I'm just summing over all the particles in the event. I'm defining a function on each particle in the event. I'm just summing this function. And this n tilde jet is able to count the number of jets because, as you can see, there are peaks of the red curve corresponding to the integer values. But there are situations, this function is somehow interpolating between those integer values, right? Now, what is this function? So what I'm doing here, essentially for each particle, what I'm doing is taking the PT of that particle, and I'm taking the ratio of that PT with what I'm calling here PTIR. PTIR is just the PT, the transverse momentum, contained in a cone of radius r around particle I. So what I'm doing is that for each particle, I'm building a cone of radius r, and then I'm summing the PT contained in that cone. And then I'm building this function, which is PTI over the PTIR, and then I'm imposing my PT cut threshold on the PTIR. So essentially, what I'm doing somehow is that I'm building a jet for every particle, a fixed radius cone around each particle. And of course, you might think that this is overcounting the number of jets because I'm doing that for each particle. But somehow, this wave here is taking into account of this overcounting number of particles. And clearly, what you get out from this is a variable which is strongly correlated with the number of jets that you will get with a standard algorithm. Let me try to explain where does this expression come from, why this thing is counting the number of jets. Well, first of all, let's make this observation that in the case where you have infinitely narrow jets, so all the particles in your jet are collimated, so essentially you have just one direction per jet, and they are separated by more than R, then in that case, this thing is essentially what the sum over PTI would be the same as PTIR. So what you would get from here is essentially this object in the limit of infinitely narrow jet, which is precisely the number of jet that you would get with a standard algorithm. So what I'm saying is that, first of all, this variable in the limit of infinitely narrow jet gives you back exactly the same thing as a standard algorithm. It's starting to give you a different result precisely when you go away from this limit, which is the limit of a well-separated jet, which is precisely the limit where I'm interested in, which is because it's the case when the jets start to overlap. Now, how do I get this expression? Why this expression? Okay, it goes back to the standard jet counting for the in this limit, but why this expression? How do I get this expression? So let's start to go through this, because this is going to give you, is going to give us some kind of general recipe that then we can apply not only to the number of jets, but to any other observable, which is of this form. Okay, so let's start with what I'm calling an inclusive jet observable, where inclusive means that I'm summing over all jets, right? So if I'm running an algorithm, I can always write the number of jets in this way, right? So I'm just counting one for each jet whose PT is above the PT cut threshold. Okay, so that's my number of jet. Now, I want to end up with some kind of event shape. And as I said, the event shape is essentially a sum over all the particles in the event. So somehow I need to turn this sum into a sum over all the particles in the event. So I'm going to insert here this kind of unitarity relationship. So essentially, I'm assuming that the PT of the jet is the sum of the PT of its constituents. That's in general not true, because what you do in a jet, you sum the four momenta. And so the total four momentum, it's a nonlinear function of the PT, because you have the square root of PTX squared and PY squared. But this is a good approximation in the limit where the jet is collinear. And in general, you can always define the PT of the jet, if you want, as the sum of the PTI. There is no reason for why you must define you have the freedom to choose in which way you want to define the PT of the jet. So if this is one, well, now I'm on a good track, because the what I get here is a sum over the constituents in each jet, and then I'm summing over all jets. So this is essentially a sum over all the particles in the event, right? So I can replace this double sum with a sum over all the particles in the event. And what I'm going to do for this case is that instead of PTJ, I'm replacing this PTJ with this PTIR, which is, as I said, the PT contained in a cone of radius r around particle I. So if you do that from this expression, you precisely get back the variable that I was talking about before, which is this event shape. Now, this is a general strategy in the sense that I can apply precisely the same thing to any kind of inclusive jet observable. So in our case, in the case before, this observable was the number of jet, and this function was just one. But you can have any general function defined in terms of the jet constituents. And what you have to do is that you turn this sum into a sum over all the particles. You get this weight for each particle. And then that function that was defined in terms of the constituents of the jet now is a local function around particle I and defined in a cone of radius r around particle I. So that kind of strategy allows you to define an event shape for any inclusive jet observable. And the number of jets is just an example. And here I'm just showing another couple of examples, which is HT and missing transverse energy, which are other... we usually use variables at the LHC. And as you can see, the green curve is the result that you will get for the case of an anti-KT, so with a standard jet algorithm. And the red curve is what you get with those two variables, which is essentially what you get by applying the recipe that I just told you. As you can see, they are strictly correlated. There are differences in the behavior. So the behavior of the red one is a milder behavior, for example, here. But they are essentially strictly correlated variables. Okay. So Let me now talk about something that might look very different, but indeed, this thing is going to fall into the same category of a jet-based observable that can be turned into an event shape.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
If you have an observable that cares about central jets or not forward jets, does that translate well? I mean, I might worry that in some sense, saying a jet is forward or central is a little bit different from distinguishing whether the individual particle is forward or central.
Yes. So you ask questions about individual jets, right? So.
Let's say just a counting question. So you want to count the total number of central jets.
Right. Yeah. So you are imposing some kind of restriction in eta, for example.
You know the theta function, and the question is in that case, right? You're putting a theta function on the central eta of the jet versus a theta function.
No.
On
so in that case, so these things works only if you are summing over all the jets in your event. So you are not making any restriction in eta, for example. But I'm going to show you at the end of the talk that actually you can also say something about individual jets. So you can also say something, for example, about the axis of each jet. And in that case, so you could use that to answer your question. So I'm going to show you that at the end. Okay. So let me say a few words about trimming. So what is trimming? So in general, under the name of grooming methods, we have a lot of procedures that you can use essentially to remove a soft wide-angle radiation from a jet. This is something that is so for example, pile up. So what is pile up? So when you have a proton-proton collision, you have a bunch of proton colliding with another bunch of proton. Whenever you get an hard interaction between a parton from a proton and a parton from another proton, you're going to get also a lot of other soft radiation around, coming, for example, from other protons in the same bunch, from other partons in the same protons, from initial state radiations, final state radiation. So all these things are going to be typically a noise in your signal. And typically what you would like to do is remove those kind of soft radiation. Trimming is one of the way, along with pruning and filtering and other kind of algorithms that have been developed to try to remove these. And for example, to try to improve the mass resolution. So if you have a boosted top decaying, then you're gonna get the decay product group your decay product into a jet. This jet will be contaminated by this soft radiation. So if you calculate the mass of this boosted top of this jet that contains the decay products of the top, the mass resolution is gonna be degraded by this soft radiation contamination. And you can apply one of these methods, for example, to improve your mass resolution. I'm going to show you some plot later. What I want to focus on is trimming. In the traditional form of trimming, what you do is that you have an initial jet, then you recluster your jet constituents into smaller subjets. So you choose a radius R sub smaller than the original radius. And then you're going to set a criterion on the PT. You're going to choose which one of these subjects you want to keep, which one you want to throw away. You want to keep only the subjects whose PT compared to the PT of the jet is above some F-cut threshold. So you have two parameters. You have R sub, which is giving you the radius of the subjects, and F-cut, which is setting this threshold for keeping or throwing away the subjects. So this is essentially what trimming is doing. And it has been proven that trimming has a very good... it's very good, for example, in improving the mass resolution for these boosted objects. Now, this kind of procedure requires applying a jet algorithm twice, right? Because first you have to build your jets, and then you have to build your subjects within the jets. So it requires running a jet algorithm twice. What I want to show you is that actually you can recast this procedure in terms of an event shape. So you don't have to run any algorithm, never. You just need to build an event shape, and I'm going to show you how this thing works. And at the end of the day, you are going to assign a weight to each particle and deciding if that is you're going to keep or throw away individual particles. So let's take the four momentum of the whole event. The four momentum of the whole event is the sum of the four momenta of the jets, right? And I'm trimming those jets. So I'm going to write this stands for trimming, for trimmed. So the trimmed four momentum of a jet would be the sum of the four momentum of the subjects, where on these subjects I'm imposing the FCAT criterion, right? So I'm keeping only the subjects whose PT over PTJ is above the FCAT threshold. But now, the way I've written this thing is precisely in the same form as I was talking before, because this is a sum over the subject, over the jets, then a sum over the subjects, and I can always write P mu sub as a sum over the constituents of the subjects. So at the end of the day, what I get here is a sum over all the particles in the event. So I can replace this with the sum over all the P mu in the event, and then I'm going to play precisely the same game, the only with the PTR. The only difference is that now I have two R, right? I've had the big radius and the small radius. So what I'm going to do is build a cone of radius R and a cone of radius R sub for each particle, and comparing the PT contained in the cone of radius R sub and the cone of radius R to that for each particle. This is going to give me the event-shaped version of the trimmed four momentum of the whole event. An easy way to say this is that what I'm doing at the end of the day in this form of trimming is just assigning a weight to each particle, because I'm going to write the T mu of the event as a sum of the four momenta of each particle, but then I'm attaching to each particle this weight, which is either 0 or 1, and this weight is playing for me, is essentially playing the role of a trimming procedure. What is nice about this approach of assigning weight to each particle is that, well, first of all, if you have some kind of event shape, then you can get the trimmed version of that event shape in parallel, in the sense that you can just attach, if you have an event shape, if you're summing over all the particles, you can just attach this weight, and you're gonna get the trimmed version of that event shape. The other thing is that this kind of approach is very easily, you can very easily generalize this kind of approach, because now you have a weight for each particle, and you can, for example, combine this weight with other kind of weights, for example, other theoretical or experimental weight that you might want to take into account. So that's an easy procedure. Let me show you some result. So this is precisely what I was talking about. It's the example of the top decaying. What you are trying to do is trying to reconstruct the mass. Well, you are calculating the mass of the jet containing the decay product of the top. So if you don't do any trimming, as you can see, the mass resolution for the top sample is pretty low. If you start doing the standard trimming, then you can see that you are improving a lot the mass resolution. That's the green curve. And the red curve is just applying this shape trimming. And as you can see, that's for the top decaying, that's for the background to that, which is just QCD digest. As you can see, the performance of this event trimming procedure is essentially the same, as I mean, comparable with the performance of a standard tree trimming. Yes? Right. So there are different ways of defining this. In this particular example, what I'm doing is that I'm doing a event-wide trimming first, and then I'm applying an anti-KT algorithm, and that the mass of the jet is just the mass of the jet that I get from the anti-KT. So the event-wide trimming is used before, and then I'm just running a standard algorithm. You can do also, there are different things that you can do, because you could also first building your jets, and then implementing trimming as a jet shape, because it's essentially the same thing, and then that will give you similar results in that case.
The original BDRS mass drop and filtering, for example, was for doing boosted Higgs analysis in the VPR channel. So you would say, do the event shape on the entire event and then cluster.
So that's a different question, because so trimming, what I showed here is that trimming definitely is. You can recast trimming in this way. It's not clear if you can recast the mass drop or filtering or pruning in this way. And the reason because is that those kind of algorithms are somehow recursive algorithms in an intrinsic way. So each step if you run those kind of algorithms, each step depends on the step before. So it's not, we don't know yet if we can recast those things in terms of in a closed form, so in terms of an event shape. For now, what I'm showing, what I'm showing you here is just streaming.
So, in this, throughout this whole study, how are you defining an individual particle? Are you just taking the Pythia output of the particle?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So here in those kind of studies, yes. So what I'm doing is just generating my matrix element and then doing the parton showering and hadronization with Pythia. That's for what is for me for now a particle. I would say that you can apply this if you want to do a more realistic study, you can apply this to calorimeter cells. That would be like my particle in a more realistic situation. But all those studies are made with PTI and the usual Monte Carlo tools.
Okay, so you're also, in addition to that, you're not segmenting it into
No.
Is it clear that this method will... is it clear that the method will remain as effective under...
Well, it's not clear. Actually, I'm trying to do... I'm also involved with a couple of people from the CMS experiment because we met at the Boost conference and they were interested in trying to see this on real data, but we don't have a result yet. But we are trying to test this on real data.
Okay.
So I don't have an answer to that yet. Hopefully, it will be as effective. Okay. So the same thing happens for the pileup reduction. So as I said, what you can do, so this is a Z nu nu bar J sample. What I'm doing here is essentially I'm overlaying on this signal a certain number of secondary vertices of interaction. So essentially, those are playing the role of these pileup events I was talking about before. And what you can do is that you can see how the average jet mass is going to change because of this number of pileup events. So if you don't trim, then of course you get an increasing mass. If you do the traditional trimming, then you get the green curve. So the ideal goal would be that you get a flat distribution. So essentially, you have some kind of technique that is able to get rid of this contamination from these secondary vertices of interaction. So the tree trimming is roughly achieving this. The event shape trimming is performing with a different, we had to tune a different value of F cut, so it's performing a little worse than the tree trimming, but essentially, it's not as worse. So it's a comparable behavior. Well, what you will get is that this thing is going to increase a little bit more. So we try to for this example, what we did is choosing a value of F-cat in such a way that you are not over-trimming in this low pileup region. Because if you choose the same value, so you would start essentially with the same performance, but then this will go more up. Okay, so now let me get back to this individual jet thing. As I said, it looks like that what we can do in this framework is essentially turning an inclusive jet-based observable, so where you are summing over all the jets, into an event shape. So I showed you some example, the number of jets, HT, trimming. What I'm gonna show you now is that actually in this framework, you can also say something about individual jets. How? First, let's start with the jet PT. Say that I want to know what's the PT of the hardest jet in my event in this framework. That might be useful, for example, because I'm going to talk about that a little bit later, but if I want to use that, for example, the trigger level, and I'll tell you why this one might think to use this at the trigger level, then the trigger wants to know, for example, the total number of jets. My baby wants also to know what's the PT of the hardest jet, wants to know where are the jets, the jet axis. So what I'm going to show you is that in this framework, you can actually get information both about the jet PT, the PT of the single jets, and about the direction of the single jets. So the way it works, it's easy because, so let's think about this. I can all, in a standard approach, so when I'm running a standard jet algorithm, I can always define the PT of the n-hardest jet in terms of the inverse function of the number of jets in terms of the PT cut, right? So here is an example. That's the number of jets. This is the PT cut threshold. So obviously, this is an event with two jets, right? Whenever the PT cut crosses a threshold that corresponds to the PT of a jet, then the number of jets drops by one, right? So in this example, we would have the softest jet. We have two jets. And the softest jet has a PT of roughly 30 GeV, the other one of 45 GeV, right? So that's an easy way to define the PT of the jet. I'm going to take the number of jets as a function of PT cut. I'm taking the inverse, the zero inverse, because of course there is a range of value, but I can always define, since it's a monotonic function, I can always define this right extremum. So I can always define the PT of the jet as the value of PT cut corresponding to the number of jet equal to the jet that I'm interested in. Now the nice thing is that now for the case of the event shape, I have a kind of analytical dependence on PT jet on the PT cut, because it's not like an algorithm where you have a black box, so you are inserting your particles and you get out your jets. Here you have a closed form and you have a clear dependence on your parameters, on PT cut and R. So you can find in an analytic way what's the inverse of this function. So I can always define the PT of the jet by finding the inverse function of n tilde jet with respect to PT cut. It is an example, as you can see. So the red curve is for this particular event is it's the n tilde as a function of PT cut. So for this example, as you can see, they cross roughly at 1.5 and 0.5. So of course, because of this pseudo inverse, you have the freedom of choosing where you want to define the inverse. And the way I'm defining the PT of the n hardest jet is just the PT cut that corresponds to n tilde equal to n minus 0.5. So if you do that, then in this sample, as you can see, you get an incredible agreement. So this is the distribution of the PT of the hardest jet and the next two hardest jets for a die jet event. The green curve is again is the result that you will get with an anti-KT algorithm. The red curve is what you get with this definition of the PT. And as you can see, there is a very good agreement. The other thing I want to say a few words about is the jet axis, which comes back to the Natalia's question. So this is actually a question that came out because we were talking like to Atlas people, because, well, of course, right now it's during the LHC shutdown. This is a period where people, especially from Atlas and CMS, are thinking about upgrading their trigger, for example. So Atlas people were interested in trying to try this kind of approach at the trigger level. But what they have is that the very low level trigger wants to know not only the total number of jets that you have, for example, but also to know where roughly what's the location of those jets, because then it has to pass this information to the higher level trigger. So can you get the jet axis with this kind of approach? Yes, you can. And the way you do is through this probability density. So let's think about this function. So this function that I've written here is a probability density for jet axis. What I'm doing is just, so I'm running my algorithm, I get my n jets. Each of those jets has a given direction. So this function would be just a function that has peaks corresponding to the axis of each jet, right? But now this function, this density function, is precisely again of this form where I'm summing over all jets. So I can always turn this with the same recipe that I told you in a event shape. My event shape would be something like this. So where I've assigned the usual weight that comes from here to turn this sum into the sum over all particles, and then the local measure, which was this the direction of the axis of a given jet, becomes this local direction, which you are going to find by recombining the particle containing a cone of radius r around each particle. So if you do that, that what is what so say that you are going to recombine the particle. So you take each particle. For each particle, you recombine the particle contained in a cone of radius r around that particle. Say that you are just, the way you recombine them is just summing the four momenta. So each particle, for each particle, I get back a direction, which is the sum of the four momenta contained in a cone of radius r around that particle, right? In general, each particle is giving me back some kind of different direction, right? So I will get a distribution for those directions. Those distributions will be peaked around the directions for that you will get with a standard jet approach. Now, the problem of this is that if you want to define from an algorithmic point of view this thing, it's kind of hard because every particle is pointing, is giving me back a different direction, so it's not clear the way I'm defining. Well, if I look at a distribution, I see the distribution peaking around the directions, but if I want to define this from an algorithmic point of view, it's kind of harder. But what you can do is that you can choose a different recombination scheme. So around each particle, instead of recombining those particles by summing the four momenta containing the cone of radius r, what you can do is applying another recombination, which is called a winner-take-all. In the winner-take-all recombination, the recombined direction, so the z-axis, is always one of the particles contained in this cone. Because essentially, you start by taking the two closest particles, and then the one that has the larger PT wins. So the direction of the jet, the recombined direction of these two, instead of being the sum of the two four momenta, is the direction of the hardest one. And then you keep going this. So at the end of the day, with this winner-take-all recombination, you always get out as a jet direction, the direction of one of the particles. That's easier, because now if you do this, if you apply this procedure, the number of different directions that you get out by applying this procedure around each particle is much less. And you can choose, for example, the ones that have the largest of this weight. And as you can see, so this plot is taking, again, the diejet sample. Those are essentially the coordinates of the hardest jet. That's eta coordinate, and that's the phi coordinate. And this is comparing what you would get with the anti-KT, which is eta and phi, what do you get with this event shape, with this winner-take-all recombination, which is eta tilde and phi tilde. And as you can see, there is a very strong correlation between these two. So essentially, in almost all the cases, you get the right direction by applying this. Yes?
I missed something. How do you get the hardest jet axis? I thought this is a sum over, vector sum over all axes or something.
So, yes. So the point is that each particle is going to give me back a certain direction, and has also a weight assigned to that particle, which is PTI over PTIR. So then for each axis, then what you can do is that for each axis that you get out for this, you can look at the different axes that you get, and for each axis, you can sum the weight corresponding to all particles pointing to that axis. That would be the weight associated with that axis. Then you take the n hardest weights to define the n hardest jets. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
What's going on in the events that are offset by pi?
Right, yeah. This offset of pi is precisely, because this is a diejet event, right? So sometimes you're going to miss the assignment. What is the hardest jet, right? I mean, you have a diejet event, so instead of taking the hardest jet, you take the next, if they are close in energy, you take the next two hardest, so the next two hardest is roughly offset, as a roughly an offset of pi, because it's a diejet event. And so this is the offset coming from this misassignment due to if they are close in energy, essentially. Okay, if you're happy with that, I'm gonna go to the conclusion. So, for the conclusion, what I've tried to do essentially is trying to underline what I think are the three main point of view that you can take on this kind of new approach. The first one is that this kind of jet without jet approach. Well, first of all, it's a new approach, right? So it's an alternative. If you want, it's a complementary way of thinking about jets. And hopefully I showed you that what you can do, you can turn any inclusive jet-based observable into an event shape. So I showed you the number of jets, HT, trimming, and there are a lot of others that you can play with. What is the advantage of this new approach? Well, from this point of view, the advantage is that, first of all, you don't have any algorithm. So you somehow are independent of the algorithm that you would have to choose in a standard case. And also, for example, for the case of the number of jets, you are keeping more information. You are not making those kind of ambiguous decisions about which particle belongs to which jet when you have overlapping region. So what you can do with this? Well, what you can do is that, for example, you can try to design new analysis. I showed you that the whole starting point for this jet business was precisely the case where you have a lot of jets in the final state. I didn't try to apply this kind of framework to that case, but that's certainly one of the things that one would like to do. And then there is the whole story about the jet substructure, because of course, in the same way you can study an inclusive jet observable in terms of an event shape, then you can study jet substructure in terms of jet shape. I don't know yet what kind of potential this thing has, but certainly something that needs to be explored. And let me just mention that since it required a lot of work, all this kind of framework with all the variables that you have seen and others are available as a FastJet contribution package. So you can play with those variables by just using the code, which is already done. All right, so that's, I guess, a first point of view, right? You would agree that this is a new way of thinking about this and opens, these are examples of things that opens that you might want to study. The second important thing is that this kind of approach is local. It's local in the sense that what you need to study jets in this approach, it's only information about that is contained in the neighborhood of each particle. You never need global information. If you run a jet algorithm, you always need to know all the particles at once. You cannot do that by knowing just local information around each particle. While in this approach, as I showed you, the worst thing that you have to do is calculating what happens in a cone of radius r around each particle, but that's still around each particle. So the only thing that you need to know is the neighborhood of each particle. That means that all these variables are easily parallelizable because you can easily calculate each piece in an independent way and then you can sum them up at the end. This is something that you cannot do with a standard jet algorithm. And this is why this might be very helpful at the trigger level. At the low level trigger, you don't have time to run a jet algorithm, but you might be able to do that because you can just calculate, as I said, since this thing is easily parallelizable, you can just calculate the different pieces in an independent way and then sum them up at the end. And you will get, for example, the number of jets. You can think of doing trimming at the trigger level. So there are a lot of things that you might want to do. And there are a lot of other techniques that you can try to implement. For example, area subtraction. Area subtraction is another technique which is implemented for standard jets. That is a way, for example, in combination with trimming, to further reduce pileup. And this is something that you can in a natural way do in this case. I'm not gonna say other details about that, but there are techniques that you can implement in this kind of framework. So we said new and local. The last thing I wanna say is that somehow this approach is a more analytic approach with respect to the jet algorithm. The reason is the following, that what I'm doing, what I'm showing here, is that what you can do is recast jet-based observable in a closed form. What I'm giving you is not a black box where you input your particles and then you get out your jets, but it's a closed form where you have a clear dependence on your parameters, for example, on PTCAT and on R. And I already showed you that the dependence on PTCAT, because you have this analytic dependence, you can find the inverse on PTCAT, and you can use these, for example, for defining the PT of the individual jets. Similar thing you can do with R. In this approach, what you can do is that you can find at once the full functional dependence on R. So you can find, for example, what's the number of jets in terms of R. If you want to do that with a jet algorithm, you have to run, and if you want to know endpoints of the end jet So if you think about the function njet as a function of the radius, if you want to find that function with a jet algorithm, what you have to do is run n times the jet algorithm and getting n points. With this approach, because you have an analytic dependence on R, you can find the full functional dependence at once. And this is something that we would like to explore, because that somehow goes into the direction of the so-called QJETs. So QJETs are a framework where you are kind of giving different interpretations to a single event, somehow looking at what you get if you run a different jet algorithm. So if you run, for example, a jet algorithm with a different values of R, which in this framework, as I already said, it's natural because you can get this full functional dependence. But again, this is something that we would like to do, but we didn't explore yet. The other thing that I would like to underline is that those observables are infrared and collinear safe. As long as the original jet-based observable is infrared and collinear safe, this is infrared and collinear safe, essentially because it's the weight is a PTI over PTIR, and that's linear in the PT of the particle. So that means that you can calculate those observables in perturbative QCD. And first of all, in those kind of calculations, because those jet observables goes back to the event shapes for infinitely narrow jets, then you would expect that you would expect a similar factorization properties, because in the infrared limit, essentially you get the same result. Although there are already differences. For example, if you think about the jet multiplicity and you think about just a simple fixed order calculation in QCD, at which order you're gonna start to get non-integer jet multiplicity, that's already a complicated question. For example, if those jets are separated by more than 2R, then you have to go to order alpha S squared to get non-integer multiplicity. So it's something that we didn't explore yet, but it's definitely something worth exploring, the whole analytic structure of those kind of observables. I guess that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
But if you were to run it in serial algorithm, how much more computationally costly is it then?
Yeah, so, all right, so as you can, so let's take NJet, for example. Oops, what is it? Okay, so what you have to do, essentially, is that for each particle, you have to find the particles in the neighborhood of that particle, right? So roughly, that thing is gonna scale as capital N, small n, where capital N is the total number of particles, and small n is the number of particles in the neighborhood of that particle. So there may be better or worse of a standard, because the scaling of the standard algorithm is roughly n log n, but that depends on the coefficients in front of that, depends on the number of particles, right? So that's for large number of particles. So I would say that in general, this is more computationally expensive, even though you can do some kind of optimization procedure that we didn't think about that yet, but for sure there are optimization procedures. So overall, it's more computationally expensive, but the nice thing is that you can parallelize this, as you said. So for example, you are calculating those, the neighborhood of it for each particle, but of course, in general, those radius are going to overlap, so there are regions that you don't need to calculate. Essentially, you are calculating twice, but you don't need to do that. So there are ways to optimize this,
So in practice, when you were generating this, how long did your
So we wrote that in the paper. So for the number of jets, it's not that expensive. It's roughly, I think, 2-3 times longer than a standard jet algorithm. It's not 100 times longer.
Okay.
You mentioned this in your conclusions on slide 18, but you also showed, say, HT distributions. Can you offer an understanding of how this would improve analyses in terms of global event shapes or?
Well, so right now I don't have an idea how to use this thing for the case of HT. What I would like to try first is using this fractional number of jets. That's something that already clearly is hiding something that you might want to use in certain situations, for example, where you have multi-jets. I don't have in mind now an application for the HT for HT or HT.
Well, as far as NJETs, have you actually seen a difference? I mean, have you done any simple examples to look at, say, selection efficiencies or background rejection efficiencies?
No, we didn't do it yet, but something definitely we want to do, but we didn't do that yet. Kind of setting the framework, and trying on easy examples.
I would have thought naively the opposite, that when you're dealing with pi jet multiplicity, that's when the fractions matter less.
When you have high multiplicity, you get you definitely get overlap. I mean, as you're populating the phase space, you get the overlapping jets, right?
Right.
So this is precisely what it's telling you. When you get a non-integer number, that means that there is some overlapping situation. So that's in the sense.
So you think the being fractional might be the more interesting feature rather than whether it's 5.5 or 6.5. But either 5.5 or 6.5 is more interesting than 6.
I would say that this is something to
okay.
investigate, yeah.
Well, let's thank
Kelly
again.
Thank you.